Our study this morning is in Genesis chapter 29. Genesis chapter 29. Genesis chapter 29. It's interesting when it comes to marriage. We're going to talk a little bit about marriage today. That's kind of one of the subjects in the scripture here. And it's kind of interesting when it comes to marriage how often our own marriage will be similar to our parents' marriage. It's kind of true some of the times, isn't it? You know, kind of sometimes a little more scarier than we want to admit it. As Barb was getting to know David and his family, she was very impressed by how much his parents loved each other. "They're so thoughtful," Barb said. "Why, your dad even brings your mom a cup of hot coffee in bed every morning." After time, Barb and David were engaged and then married. On the way from the wedding to the reception, Barb again remarked on David's loving parents, even the coffee in bed. "Tell me," she said, "does it run in the family?" "Oh, of course," he said. "I take after my mom." Okay. We're going to be looking at Jacob's marriages. And it is kind of interesting to see how much it's all going to parallel what his pop went through a little bit. It's fascinating to see I hadn't really paid attention before to the parallels between Jacob finding a wife and how Isaac found his. Verse 1, chapter 29, verse 1. "So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east." Now, if you recall from last week's episode, Jacob's been running for his life. He's tricked enough people, and he's got enough people mad at him. He's mostly his brother, his older brother, by 20 minutes older. But he's tricked him enough that Esau is just out to get him. Esau wants to kill David. And so both he and his mother have decided it's time for Jacob to take a little trip. And they've told the pop, Isaac, "Well, you know, the reason for the trip is we just want to make sure that Jacob gets a good wife from a good family, and so let's send him back." Rebecca says, "Let's send him back to my family back east, and we'll see if they can come up with a bride for Jacob." And so last week we saw how Isaac blessed Jacob and sent him off and everything. And so now Jacob's made this journey. It's about a 500-mile journey. He's gone from Beersheba to Haran. That's from the farthest southern part of Israel, all the way up into northern Syria. This is the same trip that Abraham's servant made when he was looking for a bride for Jacob's father, for Isaac. He made the same trip from Israel up to Syria. Verse 2, "And he looked, Jacob looked, and he saw a well in the field. And behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth." Now, I don't know if you remember back in Genesis chapter 24 when Isaac got his bride. Remember, that's where they found the girl. They found the girl at the well. So, guys, pay attention. This is the place, this is where you find the women. You go to the well. Don't go to the bar. You go to a well. Oh, well. Verse 3. "Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, 'My brethren, where are you from?' And they said, 'We are from Haran.'" And he's probably going, "Hurrah, because this is great. This is where I want to be." "And then he said to them, 'Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?' And they said, 'We know him.'" Now, see, that's who he's looking for, is his uncle Laban. "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" Now, in this chapter, we're going to be getting a lesson on Bible names, because in some of these ancient cultures, they placed a lot of significance on the names of people. And some of the names are important, some of them are not. Some of them have prophetic significance. The name Yeshua or Joshua means Yahweh is salvation. Now, that was pretty cool when the man Joshua had that name, but there'd be somebody else who would later have that name as well. We call him Jesus because that's the English form of the Greek form of the Hebrew form. It went from Yeshua to Jesus to Jesus. But Jesus is exactly that, Yahweh's salvation. Yahweh is salvation. Now, some of the names are nothing more than just a description of the kid when he's born. We saw that a couple of weeks back, you know, when Jacob and his brother were born, and his brother came out first, and he was covered with hair, and they said, woo! And instead of calling him Gorilla, they decided to call him Hairy. And so that's what Esau means. It just means hairy. Now, some of it may be just the state of mind that the parents are in when they name the kid. So here, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? Now, Laban, I'm not sure I can make much out of his name, and his name means white. Now, I don't know if he was just kind of pale when he was born or what. I don't know. And actually, this Nahor is the grandfather. Nahor, his name means snorting. Maybe that's when he laughed. He goes, or something like that. I don't know. If those of you looking for names for your children, you may consider these, you know, snorting. Okay. And so he said to them, is he well? Is Laban well? And they said, he is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep. What a coincidence. Isn't it amazing how God works? You know, there comes Rachel. Then he said, look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them. Now, see, these other shepherds and their flocks most likely are shepherding often was done by the youngest kid in the family, that kind of a thing. So these are probably young boys that are watching the flocks. And frankly, Jacob wants to get rid of them because this might be the one, you know. Get these kids away. So what are you guys doing here? It's too early to be gathering all the flock. They said, well, we can't water the sheep until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. Apparently, this well has had this large stone covering it, and it seems, that it would probably take several of these younger guys to be able to roll the stone. And so we've got this thing that we've worked out. We all gather together, then we all heave-ho together, and we move the stone. And so we have to do it. You know, I'm sorry. This is just the way we have to do it. Now, while he was speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and he saw the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So he sees Rachel and the flock. It wasn't just Rachel. He sees the flock too. He sees Rachel, sees the flock, and he's just inspired, gets an adrenaline rush, and he goes ahead and rolls the stone all by himself. Verse 11, then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Now, when you're filming this, this is not a big romantic smooch kiss. I kind of was curious about this. You know, just how romantic. My gosh, he hadn't even had a first date and he's kissing her, you know. And this is a customary greeting thing. If you track this word, it's mostly used of stuff like fathers kissing sons, brothers kissing brothers, sons kissing this, it will be used in a minute with Laban, Uncle Laban kissing Jacob and stuff. So this is just more of a customary greeting. And then he lifts up his voice and he weeps. Man, he's just traveled 500 miles. And it's all plopped right here in front of him. And he loses it. He weeps. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative. And that he was Rebekah's son, because Rebekah and Laban are brother and sister. So she ran and told her father. Now, I would imagine that Rachel has grown up hearing the stories of whatever happened to Aunt Rebecca. And oh, the romantic stories of one day this stranger from a distant land, from old Abraham's family who had gone a long time ago, this stranger showed up with all loaded camels loaded with treasures and ended up taking Rebecca off to a distant land to her biggest heart's dream. And Rachel's probably grown up hearing these things. And lo and behold, here's another stranger shows up from this distant land and meets her at the well. Just like, it's just too much. She goes and tells her pop. And it came to pass when Laban heard the report about his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. He told him everything that's been happening. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Now, this phrase, "you are my bone and my flesh," actually appears in ancient adoption rituals. So it's not just saying, "Hey, you're my kinfolk, come and stay here." It almost sounds like he's like adopting Jacob into the family. Though it's kind of funny because he's not going to really treat him like a son. He's going to treat him more like a slave. Well, I guess that is what a son is like, isn't it? Like, aren't sons like slaves, right? Amen? No, sorry. Okay, sorry. Move on, quick. Verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now, he's been staying with him for a month, and Jacob's pulling his own. He's helping out with everything. He says, "What? I should be paying you." Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah. Leah's name means weary. Now, this is not the sister of Luke in Star Wars. That's a different Leah. This gal's name means weary. Rachel means, now Dave, you're going to like this one. This is one of those girly words. Ew. Actually, E-W-E. You. This is what Rachel means. She's like a female sheep. Ew. We had fun with that at the men's retreat. Those were words that Dave forbid us to say up at the men's retreat. Words like ew and other things like that. We're manly men up at the men's retreat. We don't say those things. Anyway, Leah and Rachel, weary and you. Okay. Leah's eyes, verse 17, Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now, Leah's eyes were delicate. What shall we say about this? There's the word translated delicate means tender, soft, delicate, or weak. And then actually, when I was tracking the usage of the word through the Old Testament, and a lot of times it's like, you know, an army was weaker than another army, something like that. Here's some ideas of what it might mean. Some might say, and I kind of prefer this one, that she had bad eyesight. You know, she's squinting all the time. Huh? Who are you? You know, maybe she needed glasses. Could be. Some say her eyes didn't sparkle. I don't know where they get that, but, you know, maybe, whatever. Her didn't have the sparkly eye thing, you know, going. I know people who have sparkly eyes. Some says that she had blue eyes. No, I thought blue would be good, but I guess not. I guess they thought that was weak. This is just a little weak. She's a little weak in the eyes. Another suggestion was made to me after first service that she was weak on the eyes. And actually, that does fit the text, because we're comparing Leah and Rachel. Rachel's easy on the eyes, and Leah might have been weak on the eyes. You know what I'm getting at? Okay. It says Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. And actually, the word beautiful is repeated twice. It's she was beautiful of form and beautiful of appearance in Hebrew. In other words, she has a nice shape, That's the form. It's, you know, she's good looking gal, and appearance. She was good. It was beautiful to look at. She's okay. You got the idea. Verse 18. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, because remember the whole thing is here. What am I going to pay you? If you come and work for me, what am I going to pay you? So Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. How about this? Such a deal. And Laban said, it is better that I should give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Now, that's just like one of the most darn romantic verses in the whole Bible, isn't it? Isn't it? 7 years I'm going to serve. And they seemed, they were just but a few days. Because there's a principle here if you're writing notes. I would write this down about verse 20. Two words. Love waits. Love waits. I'm not a guy who likes to wait. I'm kind of an impatient kind of a fellow. You know, if I could, I would see every new movie as the day that it comes out. If I could. I don't want to see them 2 weeks after when everybody else is sitting. I want to see them right when it comes out. When my wife, you know, every couple of years we will get to the point where we need a new car, and we'll both get to the conclusion that we need a new car. And I'm not the guy, I want to research Consumer Reports and check out the prices. I want to go get a car. We can get a car? Oh, yeah. And so that night we will be at the dealership. Now we have often told each other that we will compare prices and go to a different dealer and stuff like that, but it never works. And that's because of me. I'm in the dealer. Car. Must have car. Now. Oh, you have car? I buy. You know, and that's just the way I am. I don't like to wait. But I have learned that there are some things in life that are much better if you wait. And love is one of them. Love waits. Gals, when a guy tells you he doesn't want to wait until you're married, he doesn't love you. He lusts for you. Do you hear me? That's the truth. I know that because I know what that's like. Love waits. My wife and I dated off and on for a year before we were engaged. And the off parts were my fault. I'm the one that always was the off guy. You know, I'm always breaking up with her, and she was the faithful and true and stuff, you know, and I'm the one that I was the jerk that's always breaking up with, oh, women are nothing but trouble and all this kind of stuff. When we got engaged for a year. Our engagement went for a year. Now, when I read this thing about a scene for only a few days, that just doesn't ring true. Because I'll tell you, that year that we waited before we got married, that was the longest year I have ever lived in my entire life. And I'll tell you, that was hard. But you know what? It was worth it. It was worth it. Love will wait. Love will wait. Verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. Now, he's done waiting. You know, it's good to wait, but you know, I can only wait so long. 7 years, I've done it. Okay, I paid my time. Now, give me woman, must have woman. And so he says, this is time. Now, Jacob has fulfilled the contract. He's paid Laban's price for marrying Rachel. And his 7 years' labor would be considered his dowry. This is the price that this is what he's bringing into the marriage. He is paying the dowry. I found something fascinating. According to the customs of those days, once the dowry is paid and received, the marriage is done. the marriage is complete at the payment of the dowry. When Abraham's servant, I didn't realize this when we were teaching back in Genesis 24, when Abraham's servant delivers the 10 camel loads full of treasure to Laban and his father Bethuel, the marriage was done. When they said, oh yeah, we'll take this, the marriage was done. Now, it would take probably a month or so for Rebekah to go back and actually consummate the marriage with Isaac, but the marriage was already done. It reminds me of someone who's already paid the dowry for his bride 2,000 years ago when he died on a cross to pay for our sins. He's already purchased us. He's already paid for us. And even though we don't yet see him yet, and the marriage supper of the Lamb hasn't happened yet, we're married. We're taken. We belong to him. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? It's a done deal. It's a sure thing. So, Jacob says, I've paid the price. Give me my woman. And so Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. It came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob. And he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. Now, this is apparently seems to be his custom in marriage, a little wedding present. He gives her a servant girl for a wedding present. Gives Zilpah to Leah as a servant. Verse 25, so it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? Now, for years I've just wondered how in the world he can spend an entire night with a woman and not know who she is. I mean, can't you tell them apart, for Pete's sake? But keep in mind, you know, I guess for Jacob's sake, you know, keep in mind these are days before electricity. The tent is dark. Most likely, Leah is wearing a veil when she enters the tent. Think of pre-Taliban Afghanistan, the burqa thing. Think of it that way. And so in the morning, when the sun starts peeking through the cracks at the tent, and he looks and he goes, oh my gosh, it's the delicate eye one. Not the beautiful one. Oh my gosh. Here's a guy expecting a blessing with a special person he cares for, only to find out that the person he expected got swapped on him and the blessing went to the wrong person. Does that sound familiar? Those of you who've been with us through Genesis, does that sound familiar? Am I talking about Rachel and Leah, or am I talking about Isaac and Jacob getting switched and Isaac blessing the wrong guy? You see, Jacob's getting what he gave. The strangest twist of irony. If you're taking notes, what I wrote down here is these words, sowing and reaping. Sowing and reaping. Jacob has reaped a crop from the seeds that he has already sown in his life. The trickster has been tricked. I imagine at this point, Jacob has a real good idea of what Esau was feeling when he got tricked out of his blessing. I imagine he knew exactly why his brother got so mad at him. We see it in other examples in the Bible. Korah started a rebellion among the Israelites. He split the nation. This is back in Numbers 16, 17, somewhere around there. He splits the nation, and God splits the earth, and Korah drops in. We see it in Judges chapter 1. There was a fellow named Adonai Bezek, one of the king of the Canaanites. And when the Israelites captured him, they did a very strange thing to him. They cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And this is what he said when it happened to him. He said, 70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off used to gather scraps under my table. As I have done, so God has repaid me. He saw the incredible irony of it. Everything that he gave to other people was given back to him. Sowing and reaping. Paul writes in Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 through 9, he says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." You reap what you sow. You want to plant lots of wheat seeds and not weed seeds. Because sometimes we're just wondering why our garden is so filled with weeds. Why I got such a mess in my life. And all I have to do is look back at the kinds of seeds that I've been planting. You know, think of it this way. I'll bet more than a few of you have been on a retreat or a mission trip or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? You go on a retreat, you know. The guys, you know, we just went a month or so ago, a couple of weeks ago. All went up to the mountain, you know, and have a big manly man time, you know. And you know, when you come off of a retreat, you know, some of you guys who were up at the retreat, don't you just, like, feel good? I mean, isn't it? Don't you feel clean? Don't you feel close to the Lord? Why, pray tell, is that? You're reaping what you've sown. You've been sowing time, spending time in the Word. You've been spending time in fellowship. When you go on a mission trip, you spend time serving other people instead of serving yourself all the time. You're reaching out. You're sowing. And so at the end of it, you've reaped. In fact, you've also not reaped some other crops that you normally do sow. You know, sometimes I spend a little too much time watching the boob tube. And I don't know about you, but sometimes some of the stuff on the television just messes with my head. Maybe not you. It's just me, you know. Shoot, I'd be watching an Angels game, and the commercials can tweak you out, can't they? And we wonder why we get all frustrated, and we get all tense inside, and we get all this mess, because I'm reaping what I've sown. Sow good stuff into your life. Spend time sowing wheat seeds, not weed seeds in your life, reaping and sowing. And what incredible irony here with Jacob. Man, he's the guy that has always tricked everybody, and now he gets tricked. Verse 26, and Laban said, so he says, what are you doing? This contract was for Rachel, not for Leah. And Laban said, verse 26, "Well, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. We have a custom here. Never marry off the younger sister until the older sister's gone." I wonder if Jacob catches the irony himself because he's the younger brother who got away with swiping the blessing from the older brother. I wonder if he's realizing that. I don't know. It is a little bit ironic. Laban says, "Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the bonus price for the service for which you will serve me for another 7 years." Hey, buddy, have I got a deal for you. I've got a bridge in Brooklyn that I'm going to tell you that's slightly used, and I'll sell it to you for cheap. And so he comes up with this. He says, fulfill her week. In other words, you just stay with Leah for 7 days, and as a bonus, you get a second wife. Not one wife, two wives. You know, within 8 days, he's got two women. Our custom is to send couples off on their honeymoon to be alone. Their custom is you spend the week with the family. We have a big party at the family, so fulfill her week. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. So he's then given Rachel at the end of the 7 days with the agreement. Well, we'll see in a minute. And Laban gave his maid Bila to his daughter Rachel as a maid, so she gets a little wedding present. Then Jacob also went into Rachel and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. So he's now paying on the credit card. He's now indebted for another seven years. as things will progress in the family, Jacob will actually not just get two wives, but you're going to end up seeing that he gets the maid girls as well. And they're going to become his concubines. So guys, think about this with me, you know. Four women he's got. Some 3,500 years later, a young fellow by the name of Joe Smith would take this example of Jacob and spin it a little bit and say, oh, well, you know, we have this example set in the ages of the patriarchs. And he developed this doctrine of plural marriage. Plural wives. People that have studied the secret Mormon archives in some of their temples have uncovered that Joe Smith was married to something like 48 other women besides his own wife. Now I got to tell you, Emma, his first wife, wasn't real happy about this. Joe got his example from Jacob, who got his example from the culture. Because Laban's excuse was, we don't do it that way around here. Are you following me? So Mr. Smith's idea of polygamy dates back not to just Jacob, but to Laban's culture. When Jesus is asked about marriage, what do you think about marriage? What's marriage all about? In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus doesn't go to the culture of the day. Jesus goes to Adam and Eve. He goes to God's blueprint. And he says, you know what? In the beginning, it wasn't that way. In the beginning, there was one man and one woman, and the two became one flesh. See, God's principle for marriage is not based on what the culture tells you, but God's principle in marriage is based on what His original design is. One man, one woman. Now, today, if you're taking notes, there's something I would write down here. What is your marriage based upon? What is your marriage based upon? See, Jacob is basing his marriages upon the customs of the day. And too many people are basing their relationships on the world's customs. It's a common practice nowadays for couples. And this has just changed in my lifetime. It didn't used to be this way in when I was growing up. It was an odd thing. But nowadays, it's the common practice is you move in together, you live together, you try it out to see if it fits. You know, you want to see if you are sexually compatible with each other before you actually commit to the marriage. It's not God's way. That is not God's way. The Bible has a word to describe sexual relationships that take place outside of marriage. Everything outside of marriage is called porneia. We translate that in our modern Bibles as sexual immorality. That's the word you'll see. But that's what it's talking about, is sex outside of marriage. Sexual immorality, the old King James word is fornication. And Paul says this about fornication, about sexual immorality. 1 Corinthians 6:18. Paul says, flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are not your own? For you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. God says your body belongs to Him and He wants you to keep it pure. Don't base your ideas on marriage on the world's ideas. In our world, it seems to be more and more common for men and women to simply be unfaithful to their spouse. It just seems to be the rule of the day. I don't know, and I guess maybe this is why people aren't even getting married. Why bother getting married? Because you know, you're just going to goof with each other and be unfaithful. There's a horrible article in the Register yesterday. horrible. I almost didn't want to tell you about it, but I think I need to. I'm going to give it a little risky here. The Register stated there was this new survey that they did of some 6,000 adults in the United States. The average U.S. male will have 7 partners in his lifetime, while the average female will have 4. God's design is for one. The survey stated that 29% of men reported having 15 or more partners, while 9% of women reported having 15 or more partners. I was a little hesitant sharing you those statistics because I don't want some of you going away, well, I got a lot of catching up to do. No. Gang, don't you get it? Our society has driven the bus off the cliff, and we're heading for a crash at the bottom. Gang, we want to pattern our relationships on what God says, not the society around us. This mess that Jacob's going to get into, I have no other way to explain it except, you know what, he shouldn't have got into it. The Bible says, 1 Corinthians 7:2, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband. God's design is for one man and one woman. And when we listen to the temptations of the world saying, oh no, but there's more, you're missing it. You know what? You are being deluded. You're being lied to. God's best is one man, one woman. Thursday night, Pastor Caleb's going to start a 6-week series on marriage. And some of you ought to think about coming to it, whether you're married or thinking about getting married. It's called Love and Respect. He shared with me some of the stuff he's going to do, and it sounds awesome. And we're going to do it at the same time as my regular Bible study. So we'll all meet together here and worship, and then we'll split off into our classes. Some of you, I encourage you, think about coming. There's going to be kids, and Joy's putting together the coolest. Joy and Connie are putting together the coolest thing for the kids. There's going to be stuff for the kids. You need to think about coming on Thursday night. Build your marriage. Verse 31. Let's finish this chapter. We read about Leah starting the baby boom. Here's the boomers. Okay, verse 31. Then when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived, bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, the Lord, and notice it's all capitals, that means Yahweh. Yahweh has surely looked on my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. Now he's going to love me. Reuben, the name means, see, a son. That's what it means. It's, you know, you want to be blessed? See, a son. So every time she says, come here, see, a son. You know, just, maybe he'll love me now. Verse 33. Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because Yahweh has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Shimon, or we say Simeon. And Shimon means heard. So God heard me. In other words, she sees this baby as the answer to her prayers. She prayed and God answered. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore she named him Attached or Levi. You know, now I've got him. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. I will praise Jehovah, praise Yahweh. Therefore she called his name Judah or Yehuda, is the Hebrew. Then she stopped bearing. Yehuda means praised. And Judah would be the father of, eventually in the line of Judah is King David and all the kings, and especially the King of Kings. Jesus is in the line of Judah. It says, and then she stopped bearing. Now, if you do a little homework, do your detective work on these chapters. I encourage you to do this. Between this chapter and the next chapter, you find out that within this first, remember he worked for 7 years, then he gets the two girls. He promises another 7 years. It's during that next 7-year period that most of these kids will be born. And if you track it, Leah, delicate-eyed Leah, will give birth to 6 sons and 1 daughter in 7 years. Now, when it says she stopped bearing, I'm thinking that's like 2 weeks or so she stopped bearing. Because, I mean, do the math. I mean, it's just, how did she do this? Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. While I'm sure some of us guys are thinking, what a lucky guy, Jacob. Oh, man, what a lucky guy. Look at all these women. Oh, man. Oh, later, next chapter, they're going to be fighting over him. And I'm serious going, oh, yeah. Okay, where do I go tonight? You know, he's just having a wonderful time. I can't help but think of how pathetic Leah is. Does she strike you as being pathetic? Maybe now he'll love me. Maybe now he'll be attached to me. Oh, he's got to be attached to me now. And I think how tragic. I think how sad. If you're writing notes, this is what I wrote down for this last section. What will you do for love? Actually, you could take it a couple of different ways, and it works both ways. What will you do for love? I see so many people doing so many stupid things trying to get people to love them. What an example here. You see it in Leah. Oh, I'll do anything so that he'll love me. The problem is, for most of us, when we're caught in this trap of doing anything to get a little bit of love, what we don't realize is we don't even see the problem. Most of us don't even see what we're doing because we're so desperate. A little old lady goes to the doctor. And she says, "Doctor, I have this problem with gas, but it really doesn't bother me too much. They never smell and are always silent. As a matter of fact, I've passed gas at least 20 times since I've been here in your office. You didn't know I was passing gas because they don't smell and are silent." The doctor says, "I see. Take these pills and come back to me next week." The next week, the lady goes back. "Doctor," she says, "I don't know what the heck you gave me, but now when I pass gas, although they are still silent, they stink terribly." "Good," the doctor says. "Now that we've cleared up your sinuses, let's work on your hearing." Sorry for the off-color joke. But do you understand? Sometimes we don't even get it. Sometimes we think something else is the problem. And really, I'm the one that's acting desperate. What do you do for love? What do you do if you think that your spouse doesn't love you as much as you need them to? And phrase that carefully. As much as you think they should, or as much, or they don't, however you want to put it. What if you don't think your spouse loves you as much as you should? What do you do for love? Can I change your thinking a little bit? Can I suggest something? Maybe you ought to find your love somewhere else. You need to find your love in Jesus. I can't tell you how true this is. For some of you, you're thinking, "Oh, it's just pat answers. This is church. What do I expect? He's going to talk about Jesus, you know." No. There is someone who already loves you more than you could ever even comprehend. He's not against you. He's always been for you. And there isn't a single thing you can do to earn His love because you already got it. And in fact, what His love can do for you and for me is instead of me being so desperate about what can I do for love, my life turns around. And it's now, what can I do for love? Because He loves me. That I'm not searching for you to find fulfillment in you. But my fulfillment comes from Jesus. And then I can bless you. We can have healthy relationships with each other. I can be giving to others and not always be taking all the time. What do you do for love? Let's stand and pray.